This is TWiT.
The Imagine T3 is a new flagship product for PSB, and we have a picture of two of the items, two of the models from that series in the family of Imagine T3. We have the, if we can take a look at that, the floor standers, the towers, and the center channel, which I think you said was called the C3, right?
That's correct. And this complements the other models in the Imagine series. We have an Imagine S, which is a surround. It can be used with this series. It can also be used with the Imagine T2, a less expensive, smaller footprint version of this tower you see in front of you. We also have an Imagine T, the whole series, a B, a bookshelf, a center channel, a smaller one. So it's a full home theater complement of products that can be configured in any way you would like. And even with some of the new models we're doing in custom sound, adding some of the new series, which we'll be introducing very soon as the ceiling speaker Atmos, then you'll be able to do a full home theater Atmos system with Imagine products.
Oh, excellent. Can't wait to hear that. So the previous flagship was the Synchrony 1, and you told me yesterday that you've made some improvements. Can you sort of outline what those are?
Yeah, if anyone were to ask me, what would I do to improve the performance of any loudspeaker? Given a model, what would be the challenges to raise the bar on that model? Well, Synchrony 1 being our flagship, I had to look at all aspects of the performance and see what could be done to raise the bar. And there were four things that I concentrated on. One was the overall sensitivity of the speaker. It's about a dB and a half more sensitive than the Synchrony 1. Another thing that you would want to do is increase the capability dynamically. So not only is it more efficient, the surface area of the drivers, in the Synchrony 1, they were 6.5-inch drivers. On the Imagine T3, they're actually 7-inch drivers. The mid-range on the Synchrony 1 was a 4.5-inch driver, and the mid-range on this T3 is a 5.25-inch driver. So we've significantly increased the piston area of the output of all the drivers so that they don't have to move as far, which means that when they do move as far, they will actually play louder. That gives the speaker, well, actually, it attributes somewhat to the sensitivity increase, but other things helped to do that was a decrease in the mass of the cone, and I'll explain that in a minute. But the fact that the piston area goes up means that the sensitivity is increased slightly, but also the dynamic capability of the loudspeaker. I don't know if people out there are aware, but one of the weakest links in today's source material being reproduced with the dynamics that are available is the most challenging thing for a loudspeaker. Dynamic range is the buzzword for the future because frequency response is attainable. We can control directivity. We have much better understanding of the speaker room interface. But in real life, one of the biggest challenges is real life dynamics. And so anything that can be done to increase either the sensitivity and in parallel, the piston area or the output capability of a speaker is always a good thing.
So when you say dynamic range, before you go on, when you say dynamic range, I think we must qualify that by saying it depends on the type of music and the recording that you're listening to, because an awful lot of popular music is mastered and released with a very limited dynamic range on purpose to make sure that you can hear all of it in the car or over the radio or whatever. So in some cases, a wider dynamic range isn't necessary. Of course, when you've got a recording of a classical symphony or something that's been recorded in a way that produces very wide dynamic range, particularly if you're using more than 16 bits, as we know, high-res audio is a hot topic these days, then you're right. You absolutely need that. The speaker needs to be able to reproduce that higher dynamic range.
Well, yeah, I agree. On a lot of commercial recordings, dynamic range is controlled just by virtue that they know the systems they'll be played back on may not be capable, or the environment that they're being played back on doesn't accommodate this wider dynamic range. But, you know, high-res is becoming more and more popular and more available, especially with downloads off the internet, streaming media, et cetera. And, you know, and some of this recording material is straight out of the recording studio. So, you know, and it's at up to 192 kilobytes and 24 bit.
Yeah, kilohertz,
Kilohertz, sorry. and what that means is that there's no compression that I'm hoping that what the musician intended in the dynamics and the sound spectrum of his recording is maintained, and probably the most pristine when you use a high-res recording. And home theater is also moving in that direction with Dolby High Def home theater, and I think DTS has a similar version. So that, you know, I don't think we want to cheat the producers from allowing from the medium, allowing their music and their productions to be enjoyed by the audience in the fullest way.
Mm-hmm. So I couldn't agree more. Absolutely.
I think dynamic range reduction is a necessary evil in some applications, but I wouldn't want to personally restrict PSB based on that fact that there is some compression that goes on a lot of commercial recordings, especially if it's, you know, compressed, et cetera.